Welcome to the Diverse Minds podcast, where we give you the tips, tools, and techniques you need to be a mentally healthy and inclusive leader. Each week, you'll hear about a variety of topics linked to mental health, well-being, and diversity that will enhance both your professional practice and personal well-being.
Welcome to the 170th episode of the award-winning Diverse Minds podcast. And this month's theme is all about intersectionality and disability for Disability History Month 2020. Now, before I carry on with today's show, I wanted to mention a podcast I really enjoy listening to called the Career Happiness Podcast, hosted by careers advisor and business owner Shoma Ghosh. She supports women and parents of teenagers with careers advice, as well as being a guest on the podcast with myself on episode 12, talking about career happiness and mental health. You might really enjoy that, especially given the big resignation at the moment. I wanted to highlight a recent episode Shoma did with Sarah McElroy, who runs an organization called Raise to Rise, where she indeed spoke about the impact the Great Resignation is having on the workforce and how it's allowing us to have more honest conversations about burnout culture, something that we talk a lot about in the Diverse Minds podcast. The link to listen to this is in the show notes, or you can check out the Career Happiness podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Okay, now for today's show. Disability History Month is running from the 16th of November to the 16th of December 2022. And this year's theme is disability health and well-being, incredibly apt for what we do here at Diverse Minds. But I wanted to spend this time on the podcast focusing on the intersection of disability with other identity facets. So this month, you're going to hear from a variety of guests who will be speaking about their own lived experiences and daily barriers that they face, dependent on a number of their identity characteristics. They're also going to be providing tips and ideas around how to shift the status quo to make life more accessible and inclusive. So if you're listening and your role is in an organization and you want to join the dots and not have a flash in the pan approach to EDI, it's imperative to consider disability in a holistic way. This is often why progress is so glacial. And if you've watched the brilliant short film Diverse-ish, you will know about this. And if you haven't, the link is in the show notes. It is so brilliant. And while I watch it, I'm howling with laughter, but it is actually incredibly sobering. So how does this come about? And first of all, what do I mean when I talk about intersectionality? So intersectionality is a concept developed by the wonderful law professor Kimberly Crenshaw in the United States. She's an American lawyer, civil rights advocate, philosopher, and leading scholar of critical race theory who developed this idea of intersectionality. She's a full-time professor in law, and she's also the founder of Columbia's Law School Center for Intersectionality and Social Policy Study and the African American Policy Forum, as well as the president of the Berlin-based Center for Intersectional Justice. And she says, without frames that allow us to see how social problems impact all members of a targeted group, many will fall through the cracks of our movements, left to suffer in virtual isolation. But it doesn't have to be that way. And she's also got a phenomenal TEDx talk, so please do check that out as well. I don't want to spoil it. It's from the lens of justice and remembering victims and people that have been murdered at the hands of racism. But it's very, very well done. So do check that out. And there's some other really great videos, and I will link them in the show notes. So in essence, intersectionality is a framework for providing a context for a person, group of people, or social problem in order to understand overlapping identities and experiences so that we can start to comprehend the complexity of prejudices they may or may not face. Now, you might be thinking, well, do we always have to talk about prejudice? And I would also add to this and say it's about barriers. It's about inequity. It's also about the hurdles that people might have to jump over because the system is set up in a particular way. So if we think about the description of a range of visible and non-visible differences, if you like, that exist between people, these can include gender identity. Do we see ourselves in a binary fashion as male or female or non-binary? The way in which we experience barriers. So is it easy for us to get to the front of a building, as one example? This isn't simply limited to disability, but we could also think about if we have luggage, if we're pushing a pram. There are lots of things within how we experience barriers. It could be language barriers. It could be caring barriers. So we don't get opportunities to promotion, for example. ethnicity, nationality, and culture. And remember, we all have an ethnicity, we all have a nationality, and we all have a culture. Often what happens is people attribute those things to global majority communities only. But that is dangerous because we have to think about the fact that culture is set by a particular standard and we will all have a culture, ethnicity, and nationality. Sexual identity, how we choose to identify that. Faith, lack of faith, or having certain other beliefs. Educational experiences, family, marital status, and these can change over our lifetimes, as can economic status. And for anyone who's done training with me, you know that I love to talk about the wheel of systemic advantages and disadvantages. And within this, we talk about power and people's power distance and some of the attributes that bring them closer to power and some of the attributes that push people further away from power. And when I talk about power, what am I talking about here? Power is about the people who set the standard and the tone. Power is people who have the ultimate decision-making faculties. And so when we think about power in the UK, we can look at the government. They have power. Very rich people, business people have a lot of power and sway due to their wealth, for example. And we can also think about power as the lawmakers, who sets the law, who sets the tone. And we're going to talk about this more. Now, when I go through this in a little bit more detail, often the pushback I get is, well, no one listens to me in my job. No one wants to know what I have to say. But, you know, all these attributes that you've talked about should say that I'm close to power. What we're actually talking about is how you will experience or not experience barriers in society. So the other way to look at this is if you are closer to power, the system is set up for you and you're less likely to experience barriers. So that doesn't preclude you from having issues at work or not feeling powerful or people ignoring you or people saying, I don't like your idea. But in terms of how you can navigate UK society, you're going to experience fewer barriers. So think about it that way. And it also means that, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to be powerful in every single situation. Some people might be and some people won't be. This is also very much seen from a global North perspective. This is going to vary from country to country. It's not perfect. And if you've done, you know, I can't show you a visual representation on a podcast, but if you want to learn more, please do get in contact with me because I do extensive training on this. So in essence, the aspects and identities of people that are closer to power will be people who have white skin, who have had elite higher education experiences, who have no visible or invisible disabilities, who are straight, who do not have any neurodivergence, who have not experienced any mental ill health. Body size is likely to be slim. They own property. They are wealthy. And the question can be, well, how do you quantify wealth? So we can look at people who have a very solid pension. They're earning over 100 grand a year. They maybe have one or two homes. That's how I'm thinking of wealth in this context. That their first language is English, and maybe they speak another European language, because in the UK that seems to hold more clout, even though we have such a sizable population of this country who speak a multitude of South Asian, African languages. And also speaking Spanish with a South American accent has a different power dynamic to it, as one example. Same with French, and maybe Senegalese French being different to French spoken in France, for example. That's not my opinion. I just know that that can be a flavor that comes through. A cisgender man, so someone who is born in as male identity and identifies as male, and a citizen of the UK from birth. Then as we move slightly away from that power wheel, we're going to see different skin shades. We're going to see maybe high school education, so secondary school education, and we can split that in the UK in terms of independent state school, well-resourced state school, and low-resourced state school. Maybe some experience of disability or invisible disability, gay, some neurodivergence, mostly stable or very little experience of mental ill health, or maybe very acute experience of mental ill health, average body size, sheltered or renting, middle income, learn English or English potentially as a second or third language, cisgender woman, someone who's born as a woman, as identified as a woman, and is documented, so had to go through a documentation process. Now, as I go through this and reading it out makes it a bit trickier. If you see this visually, you're not just one area. So you're not just a wheel closer to power or away from power or further away from power. You can be a mixture. And this is why it's quite useful to look at this. And then further away from power, we're looking at skin colour and dark skin colours, no formal education or just primary education, significant disability that creates barriers because society is set up for people who are non-disabled, lesbian, bi, pan or asexual, significant neurodivergence or neurodivergence that is not understood and support's required and that support's not there, chronic ongoing mental ill health that is unsupported, body size is large. And that's an interesting one because, of course, if we think about Victorian times in the UK, people who were large had money. They had money to eat meat and sugar, and those were expensive things. So they would have been closer to power. So some of the things can shift, some of the things don't. Being homeless, being poor or not having access to resources and money to live a life where you have your basic needs met, not speaking English, speaking a language that has very little translation or support in the UK, trans, intersex, non-binary and undocumented. And we could keep going. So I haven't mentioned religion. I haven't mentioned age. There is a lot that we could explore within this model. But I wanted to mention that so that we can start thinking about these concepts, you know, really what is intersectionality? And I think it's really important to define that. And within that, I wanted to mention this and do check out my episode on the myth of meritocracy. But it links to this idea that the best person gets the job. Well, wait a second. If we're closer to power, we're going to have fewer barriers. So it's the circumstances that can support people or undermine them. We know that they are very tragically a disproportionate number of Black exclusions at secondary school. And what happens to that Black talent is that it's lost and leached. The negative experiences for certain people around social services, assumptions about parenting. And we know that secure environments and a lack of caring responsibility enable free or freer choices to be made. And positive or negative educational outcome will be influenced by stability. And I haven't even started to mention their connections, family wealth, how people know each other. So I really hope you're enjoying the content of this podcast and want to keep up to date. And if so, then please join my bi-monthly newsletter. When you sign up, you'll receive a free copy of my ebook, The Mentally Healthy Leading Manager. And the link, and it will be included in the show notes, is bit.ly/MHLMEBK21. So what about disability then? In episode 119 last year, I talked about the concept of universal design and what we need to do. And essentially, no two people are the same and no two people have exactly the same disability or non-disabled experience. There is considerable variation that exists between people, and this will be influenced by both external and internal factors. And if we think about ability, and I don't mean not having a disability, I mean ability in its general, in its overarching sense, whether you're defined as disabled or not, will vary according to the type of activity in which you're participating in and the environment in which anyone is carrying out the activity. So every person experiences reduced functioning at some stage during their lifetime. For example, noisy environments impair anyone's hearing. If you've been to a really noisy cafe where then the acoustics are bad and the surfaces are hard, it's difficult to hear. Or if you sit next to some loud music, everyone's hearing is going to be impaired. Dimly lit rooms impair anyone's vision. Of course, having the flu or COVID is going to reduce someone's alertness or ability to want to interact. And this is by researchers and academics Molly Follett and industrial designer James Mueller from 2001. And I think this is so important and I wanted to reiterate it again. So I'm going to give some examples in linking into this idea of intersectionality and disability. So not all wheelchair users are the same. If we think about wheelchair design, and I'm not an expert, but it is complicated. And there are a lot of wheelchair designs out there. There are electric wheelchairs, there are hand wheelchairs, there are newer wheelchairs, older wheelchairs, and that's incredibly basic. I know that there are probably wheelchair users listening, cringing as I'm talking about this, and I'm not an expert. But essentially what I'm trying to say is that like people choose cars, people will choose wheelchairs that suit their needs and what they want to do. And if you look at Paralympics and you see the elite, amazing wheelchairs that people are using for wheelchair rugby, that the athletes are using for wheelchair rugby or wheelchair basketball, which I love to watch, They are all different. They're different to the wheelchairs, especially wheelchairs that you see on track and field. They're different to the wheelchairs that many people would have access to, be able to buy and use for their daily life. So it is important to think about that. Something that really irritates me desperately, actually, is lifts that cannot be used in the event of a fire. There are firefighting lifts available, and they are encouraged to be put into very tall buildings and buildings with basements. And that doesn't happen. And I suspect that's to do with costs. But in an era of technology, why on earth are we not doing this? This seems absolutely ludicrous to me. So we need to think about that. Think about, and it's not, oh, well, we don't have any wheelchair users. Think about people who have got heavy bags, maybe temporary injuries. It's actually quite efficient to potentially get people out of a building, depending on where the fire is. And I'm not a fire expert, but I'm giving that as an example. Another thing about intersectionality and no two experiences being the same, people who use hearing aids and part of the deaf community, and the connection or lack of connection with T-loops. So my experiences when I have run programs and had deaf people attending is that the hearing aid technology moves on far faster than T-loop technology in buildings. And so I've had many a time where I felt completely mortified where someone's hearing aid cannot connect or work with the T-loop provided, or something's in infrared and something's on another system. And then facilities or estates comes in and they try and help, but they've not been briefed. We're not really told these things. I also get quite exercised about the fact that we don't learn British Sign Language as a modern language option in schools. And I think that's really strange. You know, we could all have the opportunity to be at least BSL level 2 or 3, potentially. Why don't we have as standard an option to take GCSEs and A-level in it? You know, it takes 7 years to be a BSL interpreter. If we had an A-level, we'd have a good pool of people potentially. So that's another example. So not thinking about that, you know, oh, you know, deaf people over there. Well, actually, it's about communication. And then, you know, one of my favorite topics, as you know, culture. And how people might process their diagnosis or have been brought up in different ways to receive support or not receive support, keeping it in the family. There are going to be huge differences in gender, particularly with medications and how they interact with people. Most research, as we know, medical research is done on white men. So when women are experiencing menstruation and menopause, the ways in which those medications interact or don't interact or become ineffective during those biological stages is not researched very well. The choices that come from wealth, and the wonderful Shani Dandia was talking about this on Good Morning Britain, and she said, you know, it's much more expensive to live as a disabled person in the first place. So with the cost of living crisis and energy crisis and very little support for disabled communities in the widest sense, the effect is catastrophic. And of course, if you have wealth, and let's say it was an acquired injury, potentially being able to adapt properties. If it's a case of living in social housing, those adaptations take an awfully long time and the hoops that you have to go through are phenomenal. Being able to complete a form more easily in the UK when English is your first language, they're not easy to complete, really. They can be very ambiguous. And I know many of us who have English as our first language might struggle with what exactly are they getting at here. Or can you imagine if it's your second, third or fourth language? And that's not me saying people can't speak English to a really high level, but it's the nuances within that. Mental ill health and neurodivergence, and there could be a physical disability and then mental ill health and or neurodivergence, and understanding that. And I think what I've seen many organizations do is try and attribute things. Oh, well, you've got chronic fatigue syndrome. Is that why you're depressed? You've got chronic fatigue syndrome. Is that why you're getting migraines? Actually, we don't need to know the reasons. What we know is you've got chronic fatigue syndrome. How would you like to manage your workload? And you also get migraines. When that happens, what would you like to do? What's the way that you can manage this? You know, if we're not medical professionals, do we ever really need to know this? Age and what's expected as well. So thinking about, oh, well, they're getting on now. Yeah, they're going to be having medical health retirement or medical ill health retirement. I heard that a lot. Now, of course, if someone is unwell and they make an informed and empowered decision that they want to take early retirement based on medical grounds, then that's absolutely great if that's their choice. But I have seen young people who have experienced acquired brain injuries being pushed into situations where they didn't want to be in. Now, of course, health and safety has to be respected in this regard, but I am a strong believer that there are always options available. So these are just some things linking the aspects that we talked about and disability. And I don't think anyone has solved it, but it's going back to that point about a better workplace environment supports everyone to flourish. And it is about, as I said earlier, joining up the dots. And I have also seen managers and HR, unfortunately, in many organizations say things like, oh, well, you know, I've got a friend that's got a visual impairment, and what they do is they do this. Well, look at the person in front of you. And I think that's the other thing, is to think about disability. Many disabilities are going to be slightly different for different people. So if you know someone with a visual impairment, the next person, even if they have the same condition, let's say it's retina pigmentosa, which is a hereditary condition, it's going to present itself slightly differently. And it depends on someone's work preferences, on their job, what they're doing. So we have to think about the full package. So intersectionality is about looking at the whole person, considering elements that may have given you advantage and looking at it through a different lens about what creates barriers. It's highly unlikely that two disabled experiences will be exactly the same. And if you really want to take accessibility, usability, and inclusion seriously, this is paramount. And do check out my episode on universal design as well. And we need to consider things outside our own lens and reflect. There's lots of info out there, so we can educate ourselves without asking people personal questions that make them push their private into the public. So I really hope you found this show useful as the first one in our disability and intersectionality series. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast from. And that really, really helps to get the message out there. Please contact me. It's diverseminds.co.uk if you want to know more about my coaching, training, speaking, and consultancy. And links in the show notes, UK Disability History Month, Why Universal Design is So Important, the Diverse-ish video, and episode 29 on intersectionality for International Women's Day. So slightly different perspective on it, but if you're interested in intersectionality, you might like that episode too. So thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you on the next show where we hear more about lived experiences. Until then, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Diverse Minds podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you access your podcasts from. You can also connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Tune into next week's episode of the podcast, where I'll bring you more insights on mental health and inclusion. Bye for now.